You're listening to the Product Podcast by Product School.
Great. So yes, I'm Byron Jones, and excited to be here today to talk to you all about building a culture of product experimentation. Who here has run an experiment before? All right. Most of you can probably just go take a break. So I got my start with experimentation pretty early in my career. As was mentioned, I spent a lot of time at NASA working as an engineer and working on unmanned spacecraft. And, you know, something that kind of bugs me ever since then has been this phrase, it's not rocket science. And you know what? They're right, it's not. Rocket science is rocket science. This is a picture of me working on a telescope that during integration and testing and checking out some of the harnessing before we close it up and launch it. It's called a New Star, which is an X-ray telescope that launched in 2012. Something, you know, after 10 years at NASA, I was thinking to myself, I'm looking for something new. So I wanted to try this thing, product management in Silicon Valley. A lot of my friends had moved up to San Francisco and were starting companies and working at startups, and they were having a lot of fun doing it, so I wanted to check this out. And something that really drew me to the role of product manager were the parallels between product management and systems engineering, what I'd been doing for so long. You get to constantly be balancing breadth and depth in technical issues, constantly getting to learn new things and be challenged. You get to have to figure out how to prioritize different things and manage risk. Prioritization is probably the hardest part of our job as a product manager. And then, best of all, you get to work with a team of engineers to build something awesome. And I've spent the last 5 years working at Optimizely and focusing on how to build these experimentation products to bring the scientific method out to everybody else. So let's dive in. What do these companies have in common? Anybody? not quite Optimizely, but they've all figured out how to weave experimentation into their DNA. They use it at every level of their decision making, and their success is pretty astounding. If we compare this to the Fortune 1000, the Fortune 1000 has seen about a 56% increase over the last 5 years. And if we compare that to these companies that have embraced this culture of experimentation, we can see that they've had, looks like my slides got a little off, but sorry about that. Actually 756, not crossed out. they got a 756% increase in their market cap over the last 5 years. So what have these companies been doing right? They've figured out that there is this connection between experimentation and growth. But figuring this out and this connection is not the only thing that they've done, and it's just the first part of this journey. These companies have figured out how to scale the process of experimentation. They've gone from one engineer or running one experiment at a time to tens, hundreds, if not thousands of engineers and product managers running experiments constantly. This process doesn't happen overnight, and many of you can feel like you're down here. It can take time to build this process and build this culture, and when you're looking at these experimentation giants that have figured this out, it looks like they're on another planet. They've spent decades figuring out how to scale this process. At Optimizely, we've been lucky enough to sit down and talk with a lot of these companies that have figured it out and been doing it for years, as well as working with our own customers along the way and helping them build these cultures of experimentation. So we can summarize these into 7 habits of product experimentation cultures. So there's a saying that culture starts at the top, and this is certainly true about experimentation. And you can see one of the things, our first one here, the number one thing that we found out when we were talking to these companies was that leaders ask about experiment results. They ask about experiment plans when you're talking about reviewing proposals that you're going to figure out what to do next on. Leaders ask about experiment results during a launch review. This sets the expectation that you should be figuring out how to write your experiment plan before you're writing any code. And when you come to a launch review, you're coming armed with this data to help make objective decisions. Now, Michael Scott is ironically not a great leader, but if he were, you could bet he'd be asking about experiment results. Number 2 is my favorite. Teams use experiments like shields to protect their big ideas. Paul Graham wrote a great essay called Black Swan Farming, and in it he describes the challenges of investing in a good startup. And really he talks about the sweet spot for a startup being the intersection between what is a good idea and what seems like a bad idea. So this is a really, really powerful insight that the best ideas often start out looking like bad ones. Think about Facebook being a site for procrastinating college students, or Airbnb, I'm going to go rent out my couch, or even Uber, hey, let's take a ride with a stranger. These ideas don't really sound, the potential for them doesn't sound that great early on, but eventually they catch on. And this is why it's so hard for bigger companies to innovate, because as the larger the company, the more people there are to say no to an idea. So I'll teach you all a secret today. A hack to getting your idea funded is actually to frame it as an experiment. Framing it as an experiment means that you're totally changing the way that you're having the conversation around your idea. I've got an example for you at Uber. They had just launched the ride-sharing program out in India, and the team on the ground there wanted to start taking cash payments because they were pretty sure that that would increase ridership. So, but the CEO was dead set against this, so they ran an experiment. They just figured out a way to just show the riders the cash option and without creating all this infrastructure on the back end to take cash, which can be pretty consuming, they figured out a way to hack it by taking portions of credit card fares from the same driver later on. And the results were pretty great. For riders that were just, for people that were just shown the cash option, they saw an 80% increase in signups. And for those that took a ride and paid with cash, they saw a 150% increase in the likelihood that they would take a second trip. So the CEO in this case was proven wrong, and they decided to roll out cash to India and the rest of EMEA. And this brings us to our next point, that leaders celebrate wins and losses. It's really easy to talk about and think about ways to celebrate your wins, because you've probably made more money, increased conversion rate, but losses are equally as important to be figuring out how to celebrate and learn from. I've got an example from Intuit, and at Intuit, they have an award that they call the Skunky. It's what they give out to teams that have run an experiment that have not panned out the way they hypothesized. They treat these losses like a badge of honor when they get these toy skunks, and they have to figure out what happened, why did this test lose, what can we learn from this, and then they roll these learnings into future experiments. And the result of this is really profound. It changes the culture in which they're running and experimenting, but it also drives another change, which is the velocity in which they test. It increases the amount of tests that they run. And back in 2004, Intuit only ran 7 experiments. But by 2014, they were running over 1,300 a year. Similarly, at Airbnb, they had run only 60 experiments in 2015, and by 2017, they were running over 3,500 a year. So what do we call this? I like to call this the experimentation singularity, the moment in which experimentation becomes self-reinforcing within a company. If you talk to people that have experienced this, it's that moment in time in which you run an experiment that is so successful that others in the company want to start running them too. Uber had their experimentation singularity back in 2014. At the time, you could call a ride via the app, but you still had to tell the driver where you were going when you got in the car. Does anybody remember these dark times? You had to sit there, and then you'd wait for them to type it into the GPS. The mobile team knew that there was a better way to do this, but they weren't sure exactly how. So they came up with 15 to 20 ideas of where in the flow they could ask you for the directions and the destination. They did some live user testing and narrowed it down to 4 ideas. Within that 4, they ran an experiment, and what they found was that in the winter, 45% of riders started setting this destination right out of the gate. And within a few months, that number grew up to 80%. So this particular experiment had been so successful that the product teams and other parts of the organization decided that they wanted to start running more tests too. Uh, it's really important to connect the culture at your company to how you hire, fire, and promote employees, and experimentation is no exception here. That's why number four is teams hire for an experimentation mindset. We talked to the head of product or customer analytics at Gap, and he had some good insight for us about how they interview for analyst and product positions. They ask all of them to have to present a data set. And the reason for that is that during a lot of the interviews and a lot of later on when they're actually presenting experiment results, they're looking for something specific, the ability to tell a story and tell the truth with data. When you're running tests and experimenting, the data and explaining what happened in them usually requires a lot of context. And so being able to present that context to a room of senior directors is really important. They actually talked about a time when that didn't go so well, and they had actually presented an experiment that had initially had a bug in it, and they fixed the bug, continued running the experiment, and it was successful, but on the surface, the data looked really bad. And they forgot to include that context when presenting it to the board, so they had quite a fire during the discussion, and so that really threw things off. But the experiment itself was a winner, so it just took longer to get to that point. So I like this rubric a lot of hiring for somebody that can tell a story and tell the truth with data. All right, next up is leaders focus on change, focusing and choosing the right metrics. So one of the greatest things about running experiments is you get to use objective data to drive your decision making. It takes the guesswork out of your innovation, and it's really important as a part of this. And leaders who get this and figure this out, they know that choosing the right metrics will drive the organizational behavior. Some good examples here at Netflix and Booking. We spoke with a manager that had worked at both companies over the years, and both are notorious for running thousands of experiments a year, and both are very metrics-driven. Let's start with Netflix. Who here knows what Netflix is optimizing for? What metric do you think they're trying to optimize for when they're experimenting? Watch time? Yeah, watch time is a good guess. Number of subscribers. It's actually lifetime value. They want to maximize the amount of time that you're a subscriber. So they realize that this is actually a pretty challenging metric to experiment on, because once they expose you to a variation, it might take months for you to churn out. So what they did was they worked with their data science team and came up with a churn predictive score based on near-term metrics that they can use in their experiments to predict the long-term behavior. So they have specifically engineered the experience on Netflix to maximize the amount of time that you're a subscriber. Now let's contrast that to Booking.com. How many know, who can tell me what metric they're optimizing for? Is it LTV? No guesses. So not LTV, but they're actually trying to optimize for who's converting right now, the near-term conversion rate. Who's booking who's booking a reservation right now? And it shows in this product experience. Count how many different urgency reminders. It might be tough to see here on the screenshot, but I count six. Trying to create this urgency around your purchase right now. You should book this hotel room right now. So I really like this comparison of two very different product experience, and if you think about why they're different, it's because of the metrics that they're trying to optimize for. Number six is teams focus on experiment velocity. I think velocity is probably one of the most important parts here, because the easier you make it to run an experiment, the more you're going to run, and the more ideas that are going to see the light of day, right? So here are some ways that you can... Jumping right into all four. All right, cool. So here are some ways that you can increase your velocity as a team, and I'll give some examples on each of these. So the first one is investing in education and training. We talked to some folks at Airbnb, and they had said that only about 23% of their employees were using their internal tools for testing. So they created what's called Dataversity for engineers, product managers, and designers to really learn how to run experiments and use that those tool sets inside the company. So within about a year, they'd almost doubled that engagement percentage. The one that is my favorite of the week, meeting of the week, is holding open experiment reviews. This one's a lot of fun. You can actually do this pretty easily. You set up a meeting and you invite anyone in your company to come and present test ideas. And you help them formulate their hypotheses, determine what metrics they should be tracking, and also help review results. A lot of really good debates over whether an experiment won or lost and if you were measuring the right things. And a lot of takeaways in terms of what you learn. So that's a huge way that you can get started with increasing your velocity. Another one is integrating the experiment and the experience layers. So this one's a little more technical, and what I mean by this is that the most agile teams that are running hundreds, if not thousands, of experiments a year have figured out a way to embed a experimentation product deep into their tech stack so that deploying an experiment is the same motion for an engineer as deploying a new piece of code. And the last one here is automating their metric tracking. So another huge challenge and pain point in setting up an experiment is, what are you going to track, how are you going to implement it, and how are you make sure it's tracking the right thing? That process takes a lot of time. And so if you just do it once and figure out what metrics you want to track automatically, that can save you a lot of time in the future and increase your velocity. I know folks at Facebook and Airbnb are also, those product teams have figured out a set of core metrics that they're using to measure on every single experiment. And another great thing about that is that if they see a winner in one area, they know it's not adversely affecting another. All right, on the home stretch here. Number 7, leaders focus on experiment velocity. So I think velocity is equally important, and both PMs and teams can make a difference here, as well as leaders, managers, and others in the company. And I've got a great quote from Jeff Bezos. Our success at Amazon is a function of how many experiments we run per year, per month, per week, per day. And it's really true. If you think about it, again, if you're increasing the number of experiments that you're running, the more likely it is that you're going to find those ideas that initially look like bad ones. So a few ways that leaders can increase the experiment velocity within a company is first by lowering the bar for launching experiments. Now, I know this sounds a little counterintuitive, and what I mean by this is we all have pretty rigorous launch processes, right? You have to have a lot of meetings. You have to go through this approval with cross-functional teams, leadership. And I'm not saying you should toss all that out the window, but you have an opportunity here when you're running an experiment to lighten that a little bit so that it's easier to launch an experiment. After all, at the end of the day, you're going to have the data that you need and tested out your hypothesis to help inform that decision of whether or not you should even launch this later. The last one here is building out a culture of experimentation is creating this center of excellence. A lot of our customers have been building these, and I've helped them build them as well at places like IBM and Microsoft. And it's these centralized teams within an organization that own the experimentation program. And they become the experts within the company and are able to share that knowledge elsewhere. So they're usually gold on things like velocity and the impact that they make on the business. So those are the two ways that leaders can increase velocity. All right, to recap, here are the 7 habits of product experimentation cultures. If you take a look at these, you'll notice that it's not just a one-person show or a one-team show. It requires a lot of effort from people all across the organization to buy in to creating a culture of experimentation to be able to get these learnings. And if I can leave you with one takeaway today, it's which one of these do you think you could start implementing at your company today? Because if you do, you're going to be able to, if you do start to embrace these various habits, you're going to be able to build your own culture of experimentation at your company. Thank you very much.